Lab, Mad Lab here with Mission Control Episode 1. A little bit different than Labology. Basically, what we do over at Labology, people who don't know, is we have a forum of this is where I do my breakdowns, this is where I give you my drafting predictions, this is where I give you my, you know, leans and which way to go and just kind of how to attack your lineups in a DraftKings perspective. This is a little bit different. This is going to be a weekly show that I'm going to be coming to you, and I want to hear from you. That is not going to be something like Labology where it's just me talking to you. I want to hear from you. I want to have an open table, open forum, open landscape to hear your thoughts, to hear your opinions, and we're going to discuss them right here. I obviously will be the voice behind the microphone, but your opinions and your thoughts will be heard for everyone else to hear and discuss. So however you need to get in contact with me, whether it's email, whether it's Twitter, whether it's any means possible, a homing pigeon, whatever you need to do to get a hold of me, get a hold of me, send me your questions, send me your opinions, send me what you thought about fights, what you think about fighters. We're trying to keep this away from predictions and tendencies and breakdowns. We're here to talk about all things combat sports, whether it's boxing, MMA, shit, I'll even go into collegiate wrestling. Whatever you guys want to talk about, we're going to talk about, but I need your help. I need you guys to join me. I need you guys to get into the rhythm. I need you to, you know, just step in and converse, and I will make sure that your questions are answered. I will be completely unbiased with my opinions. I will give you my thoughts. I will be crude in some points, and I will be completely polite in others, but I will give you my unbiased opinion, and I also will allow you to open up the floor, and there's no dumb question. There's no common sense question. A question is a question, an opinion is an opinion. So you come in, you chime in any way you want, and I will make sure that your voice is heard. So this is not a me show. This is an us show. All right, so let's jump right in. UFC 245. I want to review that for a couple minutes before we divulge into other things. The card underwhelmed a little bit, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if it's because the marketing machine got behind it a little bit too much. So basically, when you package something so great, it kind of underperforms, but it really doesn't. It just maybe underperformed for the marketing edge of it. When you get a show like maybe the one coming up that's at 5 a.m., they don't have any push behind it, and it's a great card, but you weren't expecting much. So you're like, wow, what a great card that was. I think sometimes what happens when you see it on paper, right, when you see something on paper and they just get behind it so much, three title fights and the bad blood and this and that, well, you're expecting so much when you sit on that couch with your friends or you're at a bar, you're actually at the fight. You're expecting so much. You're expecting fireworks. And even though they do live up to the fight is actually a good fight, you kind of walk away with your feet dragging saying, well, wow, that really wasn't what they said it was going to be. You know, so sometimes the marketing machine can be such a great tool, but yet it can be such, it's almost like a bittersweet, it's like an angel and a curse in a way. It's an angel because it's going to get eyes, but then it's a curse because sometimes at the end we look at it and we're like, well, it really didn't live up to what they said it was going to live up to, even though in a roundabout way, it kind of did. But that card really didn't. That card really underwhelmed a little bit. I got to be honest with you. There was a couple fights on the card that were fantastic, and there was a couple fights on the card that I kind of could have done without. And it also made me question certain fighters. So we're just going to break down a few of them. We don't got that much time. I want to get into other things, some news and notes and stuff like that. But if you really look at the big picture of the main event, it really, really saved the card. And I discussed this with Tommy G and Mike Costantino and a couple of our other friends, and the Bod was there. And when we really, it really did save the card. I mean, we were literally stuck there watching and saying to ourselves, like, all right, next fight. And on the East Coast, I don't know about you guys, but on the East Coast, you know, 1 o'clock rolls around, quarter to, you know, a quarter after, 1:30. And you're sitting here and you're watching these drawn out decision championship fights. And that's not what you're there for. I mean, I know it happens. I know it's a part of the game. But when you have people that are kind of underperforming and they're not showing up for whatever reason, you kind of feel like you're getting you're kind of waiting for something to happen. And boy, did the main event happen. And I got to be honest with you, Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman both have gained my respect so much more after that fight. And that's not easily said. You're really not saying things like that after a fight. Usually it's like, wow, he fought like shit, but he fought great. Both of these guys have gained respect to me. And I'll tell you why. Colby Covington gained respect from me for the mere fact that this is a guy who has really projected himself in a negative direction in my eyes. For me. I feel like his persona is a little bit too much. You know, his persona really doesn't match who he is as a person. I think he tries too hard. I think that if you want to be a character, that's fine. But you got to kind of keep it in the wheelhouse and the mainframe of who you really are. Somebody like Nick and Nate Diaz, these guys come across like gangsters. But they really kind of are, right? They're from Stockton, California. They come from that root, you know, so they really kind of are. Somebody like Jorge Masvidal, who is from that root, you know, he comes from that street fighting background. Somebody like Conor McGregor, anybody who's willing to throw a dolly through a bus, the guy kind of comes from that root, right? Kobe Covington just doesn't come from that root. He just doesn't. He portrays himself to be this person when he's actually, from what I hear, he's not a bad guy. And the respect I gained for him, I liked him more. I started liking him more when he was doing these kind of candid interviews where he was a little bit more calm. I mean, he threw his Marty Fake Guzman things out. And he threw other things out that kind of started bringing his fakeness, his fake character back again. But there were certain parts of certain interviews where he was actually very sincere. And he was admitting to portraying this role and doing this, which I don't think was a good, you know, marketing stunt on his part. But you know, it's just a confirmation that this character is not who he is. It's about fighting. At the end of the day, if you fight well and you fight hard, you're going to get fights. So what did he do in this arena? What did he do in this fight? The talk was talk, but the way he fought on Saturday night with the possible broken jaw that he has, to come back in for two rounds and throw the way he was thrown and not back up and not worry about his jaw, not worry about what is the outcome, what is the, you know, detriment to, you know, if I keep taking these punches, what is going to happen to me? What is going to happen to my overall well-being with my jaw? And the guy did not care. The guy showed tremendous heart, tremendous spirit, and he continued to throw. He continued to sit in the pocket, get clipped, and throw. That says something about you. That says something about you. As a person, as a fighter, and as a warrior, that said more to me on Saturday night than every promo that he has ever shot. Everything he's ever said, every step that he's stepped out of line, everything that guy has ever done in his career, Saturday night proved more to me, and he gained more respect for me than he ever will with any promo he's ever shot. And that's why I didn't like him. Now I respect him. I respect him. I think he's a great fighter. I think he's a very, very good fighter. I think he's got a great future to come. And after what he showed me on Saturday night, from being such a high pedigree wrestler to be able to strike like that, to be durable but like that, to sit in the pocket like that, to just everything about it, it showed who he is as a person and as a character, as a fighter. Not this fake character that he's portraying. The character of his person as a fighter. So that's what I mean when I tell you, like, sometimes I don't like these guys are portraying. Show me you can fight. He lost the fight. The guy legitimately lost the fight. Close fight, but he lost the fight. Okay, so you lose the fight, usually you're going to lose in a certain manner, right? People are going to lose respect for you. They're going to say, you know, he's chinny. His wrestling wasn't there. His boxing wasn't there. He wasn't cutting the cage. He wasn't cutting angles right. He wasn't setting traps. He wasn't making adjustments. He did everything right. Usman was just a little bit better. Like I said in my breakdown, Usman was just a little bit better everywhere. He was a little bit stronger. He was a little bit faster. Kobe's cardio was better, but Usman is very good. The wrestling would nullify themselves, which they didn't even attempt it because they knew that. So he was just a little bit better. But you can't say anything about Kobe's game that he did anything wrong, that he should have took a shot, that he should have threw more punches, that he should have stayed in the pocket more, that he didn't do anything wrong. So he actually won. At the end of it, if you really think about it, did he take an L? Yeah, he took an L, but he actually won. He won over the hearts of a lot of fans. He won over the respect of the UFC brass. There's nothing that Dana White can say bad about this guy any longer. There's nothing else he could say bad. Can he say he's a piece of shit and he's a prick and I don't like his attitude? Yeah. But as a fighter, there's nothing negative you could say about Kobe Covington. And I won't say anything negative about his fighting anymore. I could talk to him about a person. I could talk to him that I really don't like his character. I could talk to him about, you know, I've spoken to numerous people on my thoughts of Kobe Covington. And now I respect him as a fighter. The same thing with Usman. He won. But even if he lost, he won. Because there were situations with Usman where we said, okay, well, we've never really seen him in trouble. excuse me. Stand by. We've never really seen him in trouble, right? We've never really seen him put in a position of uncomfortability. Okay, where he was literally just put in a position that he had to climb his way out of, a hole where he had to climb his way out of. He was kind of always the predator, you know, stalking people down, getting his way with them, making people follow suit. So we really, really never saw Usman in any uncomfortable situation. And we knew if anyone was going to put him in an uncomfortable situation, it was going to be Kobe. He was going to take away the wrestling. He was going to be able to compete with him with volume. He was going to keep up with his pace. How will Usman handle that? We've seen Usman put in trouble a couple times on Saturday night, and he handled it fashionably well. Very, very well. He was able to hide it. He was able to come back. He was able to get his bearings back. There was one time, I believe it was the second round, where he complained about a low blow, and I was extremely nervous. I was extremely nervous because it showed me that he needed a break. He needed to recollect himself. And that's when I started to think to myself, maybe, just maybe, this guy can be broken. And I started getting nervous because I did pick Usman. And I said, for him to take that shot and go into the corner and sit there like that and claim low blow when it really wasn't a low blow. It looked like he wanted not out of the fight, but he wanted out of the moment. And sometimes when you want out of the moment, it's because you need to recollect yourself. When you need to recollect yourself, it's because you can't make that adjustment on the fly, or you feel like the fight is getting away from you at a point. So that didn't make me nervous a little bit, but he came back and he showed what kind of fighter he is. And I got nothing but respect for him now. And I don't think anybody can disrespect him. I don't think Dana White either. Dana White didn't really have respect for both of these guys, at a certain point. They were kind of boring fighters in his eyes. But sometimes when you have this matchup, or sometimes when you have a fight like this, they have no choice but to perform. And sometimes it throws a trigger in them now. This is the way I'm supposed to perform. This is the way I fight at my best. There's no such thing as now fighting down to my level or fighting up to my level. If I fight at this level all the time, I'm going to win, or I'm gonna have a great fight. Because at the end of the day, these guys are the top of the heap of their division. So there's not many guys that can even keep up with that. They can't even keep up with the pace that they were setting. So this is something where we have to have respect for both men in this fight. And it was a win-win for both of them. It really, really was. I know on record it's not, but at the end of the day, guys, listen to me. This is a win-win for both of them. A fight that wasn't a win-win for both of them was Holloway versus Volkanovski. Something was wrong with Max Holloway on Saturday night. I don't know what it was. He did not look sharp. He did not look fast. People can say that it was... The leg kicks of Volkanovski that was really slowing him down, wasn't really allowing him to do what he does, make his switches. You know, he likes to switch stances and stuff like that. I don't know if I buy into that. I've seen numerous fighters with very good high pedigree striking that had lost a limb in a fight that went, you know, where they were still able to throw threes and fours and use their range to keep them off. I know you're not getting that jump, and I know you're not going to be able to create angles and set traps and stuff like that, but you're still able to throw. You're still kind of able to throw, you know, and Holloway, just like he had a safety on his gun. He wasn't pulling the trigger. The punches weren't coming out sharp. They weren't coming out hard. He was kind of thrown off his back foot. There was just nothing really impressive about his performance to me. You know, am I wrong? Tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, if you think there was something that you saw, if you saw a certain bright spot in Max Holloway's performance, let me know. I want to know about it. I just didn't see anything really impressive about his performance. I didn't see one bright spot. He just did not look right. I mean, there was a couple seconds where he would move forward and he would throw a couple good jabs and tie a combination together well. But outside of that, like, he really didn't do much. Like, he really, really, really didn't do much, which would, you know, show me that this is Max Holloway. This is the Max Holloway. So now I have concerns. I know Volkanovski is a good fighter. I know Volkanovski is a very, very good fighter. He's very strong, very powerful. He obviously could. I mean, Holloway couldn't gain his respect. Could not gain his respect. Volkanovski had no respect for his power, no respect for his combinations, no respect for his game. He was just moving forward and kind of, you know, picking him apart. I mean, Holloway really never had control of that fight. The thing with Holloway here is that you got to be a little concerned. You do. Do we get concerned at this point? I mean, is he going on a decline? You know, or is this just another blip in the radar? Is this just a bad night? Or did he have an injury that we didn't know about? Or was it really those leg kicks that really, really slowed him down? You know, that really just, that's the blueprint now. You got to chip away at his legs and you got to take away his movement, and you take away his movement and his arms will follow. There's a lot of narratives here. It's hard to for me to believe that. It's hard for me to believe that because he's fought so many people that have, you know, obviously you kind of implore different game plans, but that's really not a detailed surgical game plan, leg kicking. It's a great game plan. It works when you use it. But as a professional fighter and as a champion at Max Holloway is, there's got to be ways that you understand how to nullify that. And it just seems like he had no answer. You know, he had no answer, which just led me to believe that something was off with Max Holloway. Kudos to Volkanovski. I'm not taking anything away from him. The guy's an absolute beast, and it's great to see him as champion. The guy definitely deserved the shot. He deserved to win that fight. But like I said, it just didn't seem like a Max Holloway type of fight. Another fight that didn't seem like a champion caliber fight, but a much more champion caliber fight than Holloway's fight. Nunes looked a little off as well. The crazy thing about this fight was a lot of people were shitting on GDR, that she was going to get destroyed, and they're saying, oh, she backed out from fucking Amanda Nunes, and she got knocked out by, I mean, she from Ronda Rousey, and she got knocked out by Nunes in 2013. And you guys got to understand one thing about this. This is a 10-time world championship kickboxer. There's not many people, Amanda Nunes down, who really can threaten her tremendously on the feet and show her things that she's never seen before when it comes to throwing hands and feet. Like, that's one thing people just didn't digest when they were breaking down this fight. And it fucking blew me away. Blew me away. That nobody saw this. I mean, everybody on Twitter, right, it's going to be, she'll kill her on the feet and she's going to knock her out again, 2013. And she backed out from Rousey. And blah, blah. This is a 10-time world champion kickboxer, guys. This girl has seen every combination known. She's a point fighter. She understands range. She understands distance. She understands how to fight in the pocket. She understands all these things. Even if she doesn't know how to implore them that well, which she implores them pretty well, she understands it. She's seen it. She's seen so many different looks before. And to prove that, my analysis was correct on that, what was Nunes' game plan? Take her down. Why stand in the pocket with her? Why stand and trade with her? She's dangerous. That's exactly what her team told her to do. Take her down. Don't play with this girl on her feet. She played with her on her feet a little bit. She was having some problems. GDR put her in some early predicaments. And Nunes did a fantastic job taking her down and utilizing her ground game to expose GDR's very neophyte status ground game, which we all knew that she had. And it's a shame because GDR, if she had any sort of a ground game, if she had any sort of understanding of where she was on the ground, you know, how to transition, how to utilize sweeps and reverses and stuff like that, it could have been a lot more interesting. She did the best as she can. She threw up some triangles and she was trying, you know, she was trying, but she just really doesn't have an educational background or an educational wireframe foundation of Brazilian jiu-jitsu grappling or just, you know, weight distribution and stuff like that. And that's okay. That's not who she is, you know, but when you're in MMA, it's mixed martial arts. You need to know these things. You know, and she's doing herself a complete disservice by really not knowing this stuff, by really not learning this stuff, because she's a very good striker. I mean, gosh, she only had a 2-inch reach advantage on Nunes. And I said that in the article. She only had a 2-inch reach advantage on her, but she seems so much more longer and so much more rangier just because of the style. She understands how to use it. So I knew this was going to be a better fight than it was. I knew it was going to be a better fight than people laid it out to be. A lot of people wanted her to, you know, it was going to go on to the, you know, she's going to knock her out in the first round, second round, it's going to be done. But it played out. It didn't play out like I thought. I got to be honest with you. I didn't think Nunes was going to completely just spend her life on the ground with her like that. I thought there was going to be points in time where Nunes is going to want to trade with her. But Nunes just did not look right either. Like she looked like she put on some weight. She looked a little out of shape. She looked a little pudgy. And I don't know, there was something off, a little bit off about her too. Nunes is the type of woman that understands when she sees blood in the water, she knows how to finish, right? That's the one thing we love about her. All her first round finishes, she comes, she sees you clip, she sees you hurt, she cuts your wing off. She had about three different situations where she could have finished that fight and she didn't. She didn't finish the fight for whatever reason. She had Kimura's locked up. She let him go. There was a couple times she could have took her back. There was a couple times where she was grounded pound. There was a couple times where she really had GDR in trouble that she just didn't finish. And she could have finished. You know, and it was really mind-blowing to me because we were sitting down. We were watching. We're like, what is this? She want to knock her out? She doesn't want to submit her? Like, what's the deal? Like, she literally could have, if she kept with somebody's submissions, she could have finished it. You know, she could have finished it. She's a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu against a girl who really doesn't know what she's doing on the ground with super long limbs that are easy to latch onto. You know, so it just, there was a couple things in there that just didn't seem right to me. Just, I don't understand why she didn't finish her. She could have finished her. I mean, there were a couple of times where she was brutalizing her on the ground, and I get it. You know, she GDR was, you know, durable enough to withstand it. But, I mean, even from posturing up, there were certain times where she just, you know, GDR was trying to really just grab her and hold her so Keith Peterson would stand them up. And she wasn't even posturing up, like, to just break it and try to really just lay down elbows and stuff. It was like there was something behind it where she was dragging the fight out for whatever reason. So it wasn't the greatest fight. I don't think it was Amanda Nunes' greatest performance. I think she, maybe it was, she needed maybe to go to five rounds a little bit. You know, it's never a bad thing, you know, to let your body go the distance to show that you could still do it and you could still kind of. But it just wasn't the greatest performance. It was a better performance, I think, of GDR to last and to just kind of, you know, make it interesting in spots than it was for Nunes. But listen, Nunes fought a great game plan. It showed us that she's not just going to sit there and strike. If she needs to go to the ground, she's fully capable of doing it with her black belt. But it just doesn't seem like she was trying to finish anything on Saturday. One fight that really bothered me. Was the Marais versus Aldo fight. I thought that Aldo looked fantastic at 135. I thought he looked sharp. I thought he was on his feet. He was in and out of the pocket. He wasn't as fast as I expected him. I thought he was going to be a little bit faster. I thought he was going to be a little bit more poppier. Still hesitating to throw those leg kicks. I don't know why. But overall, his cardio, his chin, everything kind of checked out. I mean, when he got hit with that head kick, I thought this is endgame, you know, because this is I even said before the fight, if Marais wins, he's going to catch him with some kind of crazy fucking head kick, and Aldo's going to go out. And he absorbed them. He blocked a lot of them. He was very coherent in there. His cardio held up, and I really thought he deserved to win that fight. I mean, at the end of that fight, he was backing Marais up. Marais was gassed out. He was completely controlling the fight, the dictation of the fight. For the last two rounds, and I don't know what the judges were looking at there. I mean, listen, it's not calling a robbery. I wouldn't go to that extent, but I believe that Aldo won that fight. And it brings me to the judges. This is an ongoing issue with the judges, and it's got to be stopped. It's got to be fixed, and something new has to be implemented because it's getting to the point now where you can actually ruin a career. You have fighters that have their back against the wall that need to win certain fights. You know, you got fighters that are working their way up through the brackets to get their first crack at a title shot, and these judges are all over the place. In what world is it okay to have a judge in the Covington fight and the Usman fight, 3-1 Covington, 3-1 Usman, 2-2, going into the fifth? In what world is that okay? It's just not okay. What fight? Like, you're all watching the same fight. You guys have to, these judges, and when I say you guys, I mean judges, you guys have to have some kind of commonality. You guys have to have some kind of streamline. You know, it's got to be, you guys got to play in concert with each other. It's got to be, you know, what are you watching? What were you watching, Judge A, to have 3-1 one way? And Judge B, what were you watching to have it 3-1 the other way? It seems like everybody's got their own way to judge and their own way to view fights, and that's fine. We all do that. Well, when it comes to the detriment of the actual fight itself, when it comes to when the fight itself lays in the balance of you, the judge, the panel, you guys got to have some kind of commonality involved. There's got to be a system, a scoring system in place that you kind of adhere to. You know what I mean? Because it just doesn't make sense. Facts are facts. When you're right there and you're watching it, you should be able to tell, look, this is it. This guy won the round. If not, then tell me, how the fuck did he not win the round? How would you have 3-1? I've seen fights where 30-27 for fighter A and 29-28, excuse me, for fighter B. Where is that normal? Where is that even, where is there any kind of structure there? It seems like there's no structure in judging. That's what I'm trying to say. And I don't know if it's because they're incompetent. I don't know if it's because they're not being taught the proper things, if they're not getting the right, whatever it is, their vantage points are off as far as what they're looking at, what they believe to be a dominant position, what they believe to be not a dominant. There's got to be a structure put in place, or this is going to continue to happen. I've seen it in boxing. I've seen it in MMA. I've seen it in everything. I've seen it in everything. There's got to be some kind of clear-cut, universal system put in place where this is what it is. This is what it is. This is the way we're going to judge this fight, these fights, and this is kind of what it is. You know, and it just seems like it's all over the place. It just seems like it's all over the place. I feel like when we go into some of these events, and this ain't shitting on the judges because it's not an easy job, but I feel like going into some of these events, it's almost like, okay, I'm going to have a backyard fight. And I'm going to have Tommy G versus the Bod. The two brothers are going to fight. And it's going to be this big event. And I'm going to go on Twitter and I'm going to get three judges that are into MMA and into boxing. But they're going to be three judges from three different walks of life. You're going to sit down and you're going to judge the fight. With no criteria that I give you, you're just going to judge the fight. Who do you think wins each round? Those cards are going to be off because you're all watching different fights. But that's the way I feel I'm watching. That's what I'm saying. That's what I feel like. You might even be better off doing that because you're going to get the same bullshit card. You're going to get the same bullshit reads. I mean, there's got to be a system put in place. These guys got to play in concert with each other in some way, somehow, because it can't continue on like this. It just can't. I mean, that should be a significant sign to you right there. The Kobe Covington and Usman fight. 3-1 one way. 3-1 the other way. 2-2. I mean, I understand rounds are close in some fights. Rounds are close. You can give it one way, you can give it another way. But come on, 3-1, 3-1, 2-2. What happens? That fight goes to decision. What happens? Usman doesn't knock him out. And that fight goes to decision. What happens? You know, what happens? Both of these guys fought their asses off. But the rightful man should win. The rightful man should win. And we've seen it too many times. We've seen it. Listen, I get the term, don't leave it in the hands of the judges. But the judges are there. The judges are there for when we don't leave it in the hands of the judges. And it's now your job to tell me who won the fucking fight. Who logistically won the fight? So you're getting these fights, 30-27 fighter A, 29-28 fighter B. Like, it's ludicrous. And it's got to be fixed. All right. That's enough with that. Moving on. What do we do with Uriah Faber at this point? 40 years old. The guy actually looks sharp. I got to be honest with you. He came in. He looked sharp. The thing that made him look sharp, though, was probably not game planned. If you really look at his movement in the beginning, opening minutes of that fight, it was very choppy. It was very sporadic. It was very, like, just unhinged and quirky. He seemed like he just wasn't settling in. It was like just a burst of nerves. Even the way he was trying to, you know, when Peter Yan was throwing some feints, like he would just react to him so hard, you know, ducking and dodging. And like, he would just have such a hard reaction to him. And it was just, he was just twitching all over the place. And it was kind of throwing Yan off. It was kind of throwing Peter Yan off. That movement, that herky jerky movement, that Faber was doing. But eventually Peter Yan dialed him in, got his range, figured out his timing, and did what he did. So, you know, where does Faber go from here at 40 years old? I mean, really, when you're 40 years old and you're in the shape that he's in, he's in great shape. He looked fast. He looked sharp. But you're not getting any better. You're not going to get any better. You know, you're just not. You're not going to get any better. And when you're taking punishment on any level, even though that fight wasn't long, you know, it wasn't long, he still took punishment. There's still a point in time where just neurologically, you know, the axons in your brain, that's just another shaving off another axon that's got to heal. And your durability is just going to start going down even more and more and more. And now you're going to start seeing a sea of red in losses on your record. Like, what do you want? What are you doing? Like, where do you really think you're going to make a run? The game is changing. The game is evolving. You know? You did what you did. You're known as one. You're known as a pioneer. You know, in the lighter divisions, you have a great reputation. You got a great team that you could build behind. And you, what are you doing? Like, there's no reason for you to fight anymore. There's just not. I got behind this fight a little bit, just for the mere fact that he still is Uriah Faber. He still has wrestling chops. He's still quick. The smaller guys tend to age slower. You know, even though they don't have the pop and they don't have they age a little bit slower than the bigger guys do. They don't take as much brutal punishment, you know, but the fact of the matter is punishment is punishment and time is time and you can't beat Father Time. So when is it time? When are you going to just wrap it up? Why do you want to continue to fight? Will you continue to fight? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if he announced anything. I didn't get that deep into it, but I mean, I just don't see no positive outlet here for Faber. The only thing I can say is I think he does deserve a shot to go out on a W. But if I was Dana White, I wouldn't put him up against someone like Petr Yan or someone super, super competitive. I'd put him against somebody who he has a legitimate shot to win, who is a name, who's not just an embarrassing name to go upon. Let him, you know, see if he can get a W and get him out. He's got nothing else to prove in this sport. And the sport is just going to continue to evolve way past him. What else? The Heinisch fight I really don't want to talk about. Aldana, I'll talk about her briefly. You guys know I love Irene Aldana, and I just don't understand how people were kind of just, I don't know how everyone was looking at her as a dog. I got to be honest with you. I didn't see her as a dog in any way, shape, or form here. I think that everybody was looking at the speed of Vieta, the explosion, you know, a little bit more athletic, faster, better ground game. They were looking at those things, and that's fine and good, but there's something about Aldana's game that I like. There's just something about her game that I like. Is she stiff? Yes, she's stiff. Is she athletic? No, she's not, but she's long. She's rangy. She's got very good striking. She's got that Mexican pride. She's not afraid to sit in a pocket and trade with you. Her punches do come out a little slow. They do come out a little labored when they connect. You see what happens. She found her range. She found her spot. She connected on Vieta, and she finished the job. And this girl is silently becoming a title challenger. You know, she is right up there. She's ready to go. How well she's going to do once she starts swimming with those sharks, I don't know. You know, that's when the athletic ability can start rearing its head a little bit, the speed. She might have to dial in a little bit more. She might have to get a speed and conditioning, really dial in on her speed and conditioning and stuff like that to really, really sharpen up. But the girl is talented, man. I don't know how anybody thought she was a dog in this fight. So kudos to Aldana. Ian Heinisch fight, I guess that fight was kind of garbage. Let's talk about Matt Brown for a minute. How about fucking Matt Brown? We all knew this was going to happen. I don't think it needed anybody, any analyst to tell you, including myself, to tell you what a perfect matchup this was for Matt Brown. In a lot of ways, but there was also a couple ways that it wasn't. But in a lot of ways, this was just a perfect scenario for him. I mean, the guy was out of the game for a while. He suffered concussions. But he only knows one way to fight. The guy just comes forward. The guy throws hellacious elbows, very violent in his approach. Nothing is really technical and tied together super well. He's just a ball of heat, man. And the guy will just come and he will just pour it on you when he's ready. He really didn't do that like the old Matt Brown. Like, he kind of picked and chose his spots a little bit. He opened up when he could. And a lot of that contributed to, you know, cage rust and getting back into the groove of things and feeling out the process. And it's you know, a lot of, I believe, but he came in, once he started throwing his heat, it was just typical Ben Saunders. I mean, it's just obvious, right, at this point. I mean, I think out of his 9 losses, 8 of them have been by knockout. I mean, come on, at this point, what is it? Where is this guy going? I mean, he's long, he's rangy, he's got good grappling, you know, under Eddie Bravo, decent striking. But you can have the greatest chops in the world, but if you don't have the mark of any sort of a chin, just pack it up. The guy's done. The guy's washed. I don't think I will pick Ben Saunders against anybody at this point. Outside of that, guys, there's like, I mean, and you know, Hooper, 19 years old. How about this kid, huh? Bright lights, big city. You know, not even 21 years old yet. Can't even touch alcohol for another 2 years. The kid comes in. I mean, think about where were you when you were 19 years old? Imagine you doing a presentation in college in front of a couple hundred people, how nervous you would be, right? Or how you had to stand up and speak to somebody at a new job, present something at a new job. You know, this kid's 19 years old and he performed on a stage in front of thousands on one of the biggest cards of the year and came out aces. I mean, that says a lot about this kid's character. It says a lot about this kid's spirit, you know, and I'm looking forward to see what he has to offer in the future for sure. Outside of that, we have Moreno, KKF, wasn't too thrilled with that fight. Jessica Eye, wouldn't even give her the time of day to talk about her. Serrano Pachota, kind of went the way I expected. You know what I mean? I mean, Pachota, black belt in the Robert Drysdale, very, very high pedigree Robert Drysdale is. You know, Pachota came in with a lot of steam behind him, and he's just been very swimming in very ugly, murky waters. You know, he just hasn't really translated all that well in the UFC. Where Soriano, you know, I said it from the beginning, when you have that All-American pedigree in your back pocket, you could do other things with it. You always have that in your back pocket. The kid throws with a ton of heat. He's got very good grappling, wrestling. So I'm interested in seeing what he's going to do. I like him. I don't like him tremendously. I think he's very raw, but the kid does have upside to him. So keep your eye on him. That's it for UFC 245. As far as news and notes and stuff like that, we'll just get into a couple things and then we're going to cut this short. Like I said, this is the first episode just to get your feet wet a little bit. And we're really not going to be doing this. We're really not going to be talking like the full card and review. This is just me doing this because it was such a big card. We're going to talk about more topical-based things, you know, news and notes, questions that you may have, conversations, whatever we can. I mean, we'll talk about boxing events coming up. If you guys really do want to cover grappling tournaments or collegiate wrestling, whatever, anything combat sports, I will divulge in if that's what you guys want to do. But I do want to talk about a couple things that are coming up. For instance, we have Khabib and Ferguson. This fight, I pray to God it happens. I mean, we obviously know that this thing has been shit on a couple times by the MMA gods. We're hoping that it happens this time. But this is a fight, guys, that is extremely dangerous. It's an extremely dangerous fight. This is a very, very, very good matchup fight. And I'm very interested in seeing this fight. This is a fight that I don't think, we were talking about the marketing machine earlier. I don't think that if this fight does happen, which I'm praying it's going to happen this time, this can be an underwhelming fight. I just don't. I don't see it as an underwhelming fight. There's just too much, there's too much hunt in both of these guys to make it an underwhelming fight, to have somebody really sitting back on their heels, to have somebody just wait, you know, to feel a feel out process and such like that. These guys are just too predator based to really underwhelm no matter which way you market it. So, and for a while people thought it would be a tough fight to market because it's been shit on so many times, but the way Ferguson came back, the things that happened in Ferguson's life personally that kind of drew a spotlight on him. You guys got to remember, any publicity, whether it's bad or good, is not bad publicity. It's all good publicity. So between the way he's been fighting, between the things that happened in his personal life, all these things kind of brought him back in the spotlight and brought him back to fruition. Khabib beating McGregor, pulverizing McGregor, destroying McGregor, brought him into relevance, much more relevance, making him an uber superstar. So, you know, you got that. Now you got McGregor coming back, fighting Cowboy Cerrone. Another dangerous fight. Like this is a dangerous, dangerous fight, guys. I hate to say it, but this is a dangerous fight. This is not no walk in the park for Conor. You got to remember, he has a very, very long layoff. And Conor's fighting style is all about timing. He's all about timing. And there's a difference between training in the gym and live. And there's a difference between somebody who's an extremely high pedigree grappler, which is Cowboy Cerrone. He's a very underrated grappler. And somebody who really isn't. And McGregor is a timing-based fighter. No matter which way you want to look at it, he's a very, very timing-based fighter. So how is he going to look? Is his timing going to be there? Is he going to need time? Is he going to gas out? We know his cardio isn't really the greatest. Really, the pressure's on him here. The Cowboy really doesn't have that much. The Cowboy's done what he's done in this game. He is who he is in this game. Don't get me wrong. If he ends up beating McGregor, it will just catapult him that much more, even though McGregor's star power isn't what it was. It's still achieving something at his age that would really, really catapult him higher, and he could really walk away with such an amazing stamp on his career if he could do it. But a lot of pressure's on Conor here. A lot of pressure's on Conor here. He loses this fight, and he's going to be looked at much more mortal than all of his supporters think. So we have a lot of good things coming up this year, guys. I want you to enjoy the holidays. I will be back at you next week. Feel free to shoot me tweets, messages, any way you guys, you could email the site. Any way you guys want to get a forum contact with me, these guys will give it to me. I'll get them. I'll respond. I'll get them on the radio. We'll discuss them. Open forum. And that's it. Let's get at it. Thank you for joining me.